The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
We are 1 month into the regular season. Are you already regretting all of your picks? Maybe just one or two? I've got Chris Towers on the line, and we're going to discuss just that on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the Sunday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Eric Holterman here with my guest of the week, which is Chris Towers of CBS Sports. Chris, we're 1 month in. Are you full of regret or full of pride in every single pick you've ever made?
Regret is more my hometown, so I guess that's probably where I'm at, you know. But look, as we're going to talk about a lot today, a bad month is just a bad month. And, you know, it's easy to have a lot of regret in April and then forget about it by the end of May. So hopefully that's where we end up.
Yeah, I think that will probably be a recurring theme throughout the day today. Our plan for the day, we'll get to some headlines, then we'll take a look at, did we get the first round wrong? Would we have moved anybody out of it or significantly into it? Any other early picks we regret? And then if we've got time, we're going to end the show with some of the biggest April standouts. And I know you said nobody can fall out too much, but I hope that by the time we get to the end of the show, you're not still taking Jared Jones outside pick 500.
Yeah, I would say he's moved up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll get one or two of those guys in at the end of the show. We'll start now with some headlines, including, I'm making this a headline, Wyatt Langford just homered. Is that a headline news? First homer of the season here, 1 month into the year. Certainly not been the month we wanted from Wyatt Langford, but how does the struggles for a rookie fit in with your theory that, you know, it's 1 month, don't overreact?
Yeah, I mean, like, this is, we talk about a lot. Like, on Saturday night, I got multiple, like, I'm so tired of Ronald Acuna, or Ronald Acuna is going to be a bust or whatever. And it's like, we have a long track record with Ronald Acuna, where a month is really not going to change how I view him. But the smaller the sample size coming into April, I think the more that this matters. And so when you're talking about Corbin Carroll, it probably matters more than it does Ronald Acuna. When you're talking about Wyatt Langford, it wouldn't be true to say we don't have any track record, because we have minor league stats and we have, you know, ways to translate them to the majors that have, you know, a fair amount of predictive value. But we have never seen him at the major league level consistently playing against major league competition. That's the thing to remember when you see someone going off in spring training, is oftentimes they're doing it against guys wearing uniform number 84, who probably won't be in the majors anytime soon. So spring training is a very uneven competitive sample. And so when you're looking at Wyatt Langford, I think you see him get off to a cold start, and you have to concern yourself with the possibility that maybe this guy's just not as ready as we think he is. But one thing that I've pointed to a couple times with him, I'm looking at a tweet from Sean McFarland, who covers the Rangers for Dallas Morning News. This was, I believe, from this morning. Wyatt Langford leads all of baseball with 21 strikes called outside of the zone, three more than second place Mookie Betts. And you look at he's got the strike zone plot, and it's a lot of stuff right off the outside edge. You know, that seems to be where he's getting squeezed. And I remember Julio Rodriguez at a similar point in his rookie season also had the same issue. He was getting a ton of called strikes off the outside edge. And I don't know if that's a young player hasn't earned the benefit of the doubt from the umpires, or young player needs to learn the difference between being selective and being passive. And if you're being umpired a certain way, you have to react to that. And so either way, I think the Julio Rodriguez example is fitting, because it didn't end up being a problem for him. You know, like, plate discipline is a problem for Julio Rodriguez. It's not a strong suit of his game, but he's good enough to overcome it. Wyatt Langford, we don't think plate discipline is really going to be a problem for him. So that's one where, if that seems to be the biggest issue with him, I actually think it's a reason to be kind of bullish and, you know, bet that he's going to figure it out. Bet that this guy, who was a top 80 pick by the end of draft season in a lot of leagues, certainly top 90, top 100, is going to figure out, and you might be able to get a discount on him if you tried to buy Wyatt Langford right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good call with remembering Julio Rodriguez in particular. And this could totally end up being just the 1 month where Langford got too many extra strikes that didn't belong, and that never happens again, and all the rest of his months look like they're supposed to. I was just doing the math on what percent of his professional career so far has been this regular season. It looks like it's 38%. So this is like half of the data. In another week or two, this is half of the data we have on Langford.
And the thing is, like, the rate at which he made it to the majors is kind of astounding. And this is the first time we've seen Wyatt Langford fail. I mean, really, since what, high school? I guess his first year at UF wasn't great. His last two were historically great. But yeah, I think one thing that I always say about young players in particular is you learn as much from when they're failing as when they're succeeding, because that is where you figure out, what does this guy do to adjust? And, you know, pitchers are pitching him a certain way. Once he figures out, hey, I got to be a little more aggressive on those pitches on the outside corner, hopefully that means that he takes fewer of those called strikes, becomes a more aggressive hitter, and it benefits him all the way around. But it's also possible that this kind of slow start screws him up in a way, because then maybe he has to start reaching out of the zone, start swinging at bad pitches, and it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle. So that would be the concern. But given his pedigree, given how good he was the last 2 years in both the minors and in college, I still have a lot of optimism about Wyatt Langford.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I just want to throw in from the chat, his home run was actually an inside the Parker. This happened, I think, literally within minutes of us going live. So I had
I didn't see the clip.
Yeah, I'm seeing it right now. It was very close to a real home run. Okay. So I don't.
We'll count it. It was like 380 feet.
Yeah, off the top of the wall, then got past the right fielder, and he kept running. So I don't think we need to dramatically overhaul our analysis just because it was an inside the Parker. Still more or less encouraged enough by Wyatt Langford, or at the very least not significantly worried. A couple other bits of news from yesterday. We did see Tyler Glasnow leaving his start with hand cramps. Not a common pitcher injury. Not yet any suggestion that he's going to miss a start. I mean, I guess with Tyler Glasnow, you worry, because Tyler Glasnow isn't exactly the healthiest pitcher.
Yeah.
But should we worry about this one at all?
I don't think so. There are historically lots of reasons to be concerned about Tyler Glasnow, but wasn't hydrated enough, I don't think, really has been on the list. So I'm willing to write that one off.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I think we should keep an eye out just in case, because this is Tyler Glasnow we're talking about, but so far, not a big problem. There was also what seemed like an injured ankle for O'Neill Cruz, but it looks like he's back in the lineup today, so no need to worry about that one. We do need to worry about Matt Brash, anywhere we're stashing him. He's been shut down with a setback with his elbow. I'm pretty sure that given that Matt Brash never was going to be more than a committee guy, there's no real need to hold on to Matt Brash in any leagues, even if we like his talent.
And I remember back when he first got hurt in spring, I think Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times initially reported that there was concern that he might have to have Tommy John surgery. And right. then that kind of got walked back and they were, but it feels a little like Yuri Perez to me. Not that it's going to end up the same, but like initial concern was, oh, this is a serious injury. Actually, it's not that serious. And then he starts throwing again and it ends up getting, you know, upgraded, I guess. So that would be my concern here.
Yeah, I would not be holding on to Matt Brash anywhere, unfortunately. Other pitcher injury setbacks, one who was a former teammate of Matt Brash, Paul Sewald, is pausing his rehab due to soreness. He's dealing with an oblique issue. I guess not as worrisome to have an oblique setback as an elbow setback. But no, certainly going to be some missed time.
This is always the concern with obliques. I feel like obliques might have like, I don't have any data on this, but I feel like obliques have the highest setback rate of any injury. It just feels like anytime guys are trying to come back from obliques, I guess because baseball is such a rotational sport that the oblique just is necessarily involved in pretty much every action that a baseball player takes, that if it's not 100% recovered, there's always risk to setback. That being said, they did say the MRI came back clean and showed the kind of healing that they were hoping for. So hopefully it's not too big of a setback, but I was a little surprised that Sewald was advancing as quickly as he had, just because I think like Yoan Duran's injury was maybe a week and a half before Paul Sewald's injury when they both got hurt in spring, and Sewald started his assignment only a couple days after Duran. So maybe pressing pause isn't really changing the initial timetable much. Hopefully that's the case anyway.
Yeah, Duran is working through his rehab assignment. Looks like he should be back soon, but yeah, not the case for Sewald. So assume more saves for everybody else for now. In other injury news, some knee inflammation for Miguel Sano. Not really a big enough player that I would normally put him in the headline, but I did mention him on yesterday's Fab Pod. Sano's been playing. And actually yeah. been playing all right. I mean, he's striking out all the time, but of course he is. He's Miguel Sano.
He looks like Miguel Sano, though. Like he looks exactly. like, you know, like he's hitting the ball super hard. He has some of the best quality of contact metrics in baseball. So a little disappointing that Miguel Sano got hurt. I also a little disappointed I dropped him. I had actually drafted him in the reserve rounds of the AL only labor auction and then dropped him after a week. Kind of wish I had hung on to him.
Yeah, I have a similar regret in one league, an NL-only league, where I dropped Jesse Winker after the opening weekend because he was similar. You know, this guy was good several years ago, and he's playing, but I don't actually need him.
Yep.
Well, oops. so much for changing our opinions after just 3 days. Didn't we say we weren't going to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine with like a top 600 player, you know?
True. I think that wraps up the biggest headlines of the day. So we are going to move into a look at the first round after this quick message from Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and the winnings roll in. We also have a great RotoWire picks tool over on our site, which will give you a whole bunch of recommendations for what looks like a good pick today. For example, looks like Mitch Garver to get over half a total base is what our pick tool is recommending today. For one example, a whole lot of options there to check out at RotoWire. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
And we are back here on the Sunday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Eric Halterman with Chris Towers of CBS Sports. And we are now moving on to our look at the first round. How many regrets might we have about the first round? And so what I've got in front of me are a list of the first round or so of picks from the NFBC main event. We had to find some first round somewhere, and this is a pretty sensible one to use. It was all, you know, over a relatively short time frame at the end of March. So it's a pretty great encapsulation of the broader market at the end of draft season. Ronald Acuña, the obvious 1-1. He was not taken 1-1 in literally every single main event. I believe the only person who didn't take him took Spencer Strider, so that didn't really work.
Yeah.
But today, Ronald Acuña, unquestioned 1-1 for you, or should we have dropped him at all?
Would still be the 1-1 for me. I know he's been off to a poor start. He, I think, has one home run in his first 26 games. That is a big disappointment after he hit 40-plus last year, I believe, right? 40, 43? Remembering correctly,
was it 73 40
41 and 73? Yes,
there
so
we go.
Look, that's a disappointment. And if you're comparing to last year, he had some 26 game stretches with 3 home runs, but none with fewer than 3. I guess there are things you can look at in the quality of. I made a solemn vow to the people who subscribe to my Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter that I would not look at Ronald Acuña's Baseball Savant page until May 1st. I am going to break that vow for this discussion because I don't want to just do the.
If your vow is important to you, I can look at the page and tell you the numbers.
Like, yeah, his barrel rate's down to 50th percentile. Last season,
yep.
It was, I believe, like 93rd percentile or 99th percentile, something like that. 93rd, there you go. So, like, that's bad. He's not hitting the ball in the air, but he's not hitting the ball as hard as he did last season. His strikeout rate, like, there are definitely things you can point to with Ronald Acuña and say he is not playing as well as he did last year, which, of course, he's not. His numbers aren't as good. I think Ronald Acuña is the perfect example of we can look at the underlying numbers, and the underlying numbers are representative more so of skill than what we have typically looked at. Like, batting average in April tells us very little about a player's skill set, but we assume that hard hit rate and barrel rate and exit velocity and all these things are more indicative of skills. The thing you have to keep in mind here is skill and talent are not static either.
Right.
And sometimes guys go through stretches where they're hitting the ball really hard and they're just not getting the results and their talent level hasn't changed. And sometimes guys are just actually cold. And that is my assumption with Ronald Acuña. Not that his baseline talent level has changed, but that he's just not locked in. Whatever term for that you want to use, I think is probably okay. But look, the fact he still has 11 stolen bases, the fact that he's still walking a ton, like there are plenty of positives in a disappointing start that I'm not going to write off the best fantasy season arguably ever a year ago. And, you know, one of the best first six or so seasons of a player's career that we've ever seen for fantasy. I need a lot longer than a month to really be concerned about Ronald Acuña. And certainly it's not like the number two player would move ahead of him. Spencer Strider, obviously that's a first round pick we regret. Bobby Witt's been awesome. I'm not ready to move him above Ronald Acuña, right? Because as good as Bobby Witt's first month was, Ronald Acuña probably had like 3 months last year that were better. So it's a lot of words to say, no, I'm not moving Ronald Acuña down.
Yeah, I am not moving him either. I do wonder how many more weeks of this level of performance we would see before we start to consider moving him. What gives me pause here mostly is 2022, his first year back from the serious knee injury. Now, of course, we had the question here in the chat. Is he carrying the preseason injury? Well, it depends what you mean by carrying, right? He was cleared to play. Yeah. So in that sense, he isn't. But did it happen? And is there evidence in his knee somewhere that something happened in his knee 8 weeks ago? I mean, probably. I don't really know how that works, but I would think so. And so if we look 2022, which was his first year back from the long absence after the torn ACL, he actually looked a lot like he does now in that everybody thought, well, he's coming off knee problems. Of course, he's not going to run as much, but his bat will be fine. And it was kind of the same thing. He had 29 steals in 119 games last year, which in the pre-new rules era, you can think of that as, you know, closer to 40 steals or something. Oh, yeah. He was a speed demon with okay power. And that's who he is now. And that's the only thing that gives me a little pause is, well, we've seen Ronald Acuña coming off of knee issues do this weird thing where he actually doesn't look at all like someone coming off knee issues, but he still looks worse in other ways. It's only his own personal history that gives me a little bit of worry here. And so let's say it's, you know, May 28th and he still has a, you know, 730, 750-ish OPS and he's running a lot, but the power's not there. When does the time come where we say, you know, we've seen this before, I think we're seeing it again?
So I'm probably the wrong person to ask about that because coming out of 2022, I ranked him as my number one player overall. I thought he should have been the number one pick last year. And so even I like the only thing would be if he's not healthy. Right. And so maybe that's it. His sprint speed is down, even though he's 11 for 12 on stolen bases and is on a near 70 stolen base pace. So I don't know what to take of that. The quality of contact metrics this year are actually significantly worse than they were in 2024 as well. So that's one where I don't even know how much that analogy carries over because he's looking like a different version of himself in a way that has not been true even when the production was fairly similar. So I think there are like there are reasons to believe that Ronald Acuña is not the same guy he's been. The quality of contact metrics, the fact that he dealt with that knee injury are all valid complaints, I think. But I guess the way I look at it is if you were to trade Ronald Acuña for Bobby Witt,
right,
and both of them play to their upside, you're going to be disappointed in that trade, right?
Yeah, I think most likely. I am definitely still on that side. I think it's not if you included the caveat and both of them play to their upside, then 100%, yes.
And so I look at it when you're talking about that, like, if Ronald Acuña keeps playing like this, you're going to be disappointed. Right. If he finishes with, I don't know, 15 to 20 homers and 55, 60 steals. The other thing, though, he's still on pace for like 140 runs.
Right, right.
And I still think like 255 batting average, that's way too. So I don't know. I still think even a a diminished version of Ronald Acuna like what we saw in 2022. I still think if I know that's the downside and the upside is he's $30 more valuable than any player in fantasy, right. I still, there's certainly no 1-1 trade I could make for him. If it's Bobby Witt plus another must-start player, that's I start considering it. Mookie Betts right. plus another must-start player, I start to consider it. But it needs to be, I still think it needs to be a significant overpay to get me to give up Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because there's every chance in the world that this just turns out to be a cold month after he had a disrupted spring. Mm-hmm. What veteran hasn't had a cold April after a disrupted spring? So plenty of reason to believe that's the way things could go. Moving down the first round in the main event, obviously Spencer Strider, I don't think you're taking him second overall this year or next year or maybe even the year after that. We'll see. Bobby Witt, we're not going to dwell on long because this is about where you take him. We only want to talk about the guys who we might think about moving significantly.
In his case, though, that leap he made in the second half last year looks real.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I'm feeling very good about ranking Bobby Witt where I did. Definitely not moving him in any way. Julio Rodriguez, though, has been bad. He's not been very good. Well, bad, maybe overstating it, but he's been below average, mm-hmm. a 97 WRC plus so far, one homer. He does have seven steals. He's striking out 32% of the time with a 5.5% walk rate. That's not good. And he's also got a BABIP over 400, so his results could be a lot worse. Now, yeah, we can do the he's just cold thing. But how much faith do you have in that with Rodriguez, who doesn't have as long of a track record with Acuna? Do you think that you'd at least consider moving him into the middle of the first round if we redrafted him today? Or are you fine with your original ranking on Julio?
He's another one that I have not moved down. Well, I guess I had him ahead of Bobby Witt coming into the season. Now I have him behind Bobby Witt, so I guess I have moved him down. But one thing I do like to look for when talking about slow starts with players is this new? Is the way they're playing currently something that we've never seen before? And in Julio Rodriguez's case, no, not really. He has a 314. Let me get the exact numbers because I want to be. Yeah. All right. So I'm looking at a rolling graph of his last 23 games because that's the entirety of the season so far. He has a 311 WOBA. He had like 26 different 25 or 23 game stretches last year worse than that.
Right.
I think he had several stretches his rookie season that were worse than that. I think in Julio Rodriguez's case, this is just kind of who he is in a different way than I would say about Ronald Acuna, where I think we just have to live with Julio Rodriguez is going to have stretches like this because he's got bad plate discipline. And there are going to be times when, you know, think of like Justin Upton. If the people listening remember, you know, just a decade ago, Justin Upton would always at the end of the season, mostly get to his numbers. He'd get to 28 to 30 homers and, you know, the batting average would be 260, 270, but it would be like 1 month he hit 140 and 1 month he hit 380. And he would just get insanely hot and insanely cold. And I think that might just be Julio Rodriguez, just who he is. And so that's another one where this isn't really out of the norm from what we've seen from Julio Rodriguez in his career. So I don't see much reason to be too concerned. But like, we are slicing fairly thin in right. the air that we're talking about. So if you want to move Bobby Witt and Mookie Betts ahead of him, I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Right. Probably not a lot of leagues where you're going to send a Julio for Betts trade offer, but yeah. Maybe if it makes sense to both teams, maybe. The further reason why I'm not too worried about Julio is he's done this before in April. If you look at his monthly mm-hmm. splits, he's got a 91 WRC plus for the month of April. Then it's 130 in May, 121, 138, 177, and 157. Yeah. It's a pretty consistent thing at this point that Julio is subpar in the first month and then great the rest of the way. And I'm always a little bit hesitant to buy into those after just two or three seasons. But, you know, we shouldn't completely ignore it. This might just be someone who doesn't get his swing into groove until he's had, you know, maybe he needs 2 months of spring training effectively.
No, I think that's probably the way I would look at it. And look, maybe there is something that he needs to do different in his preparation for the season, but that's out of my purview. I'm just going to take what I see, right. And what I see is a guy who, whether it's he just habitually gets off to slow starts or he's just prone to really cold slumps and really hot slumps, and he's just not going to be a consistent player either way, I think it is who he is. And so I'm not gonna hold it against him necessarily.
Right there with you. Moving down in the first round, I think Mookie Betts, Kyle Tucker, we can just breeze past. They are still very much in that range of the draft. But Corbin Carroll, he was one who was divisive, I think, back during draft season. And actually, the fact that he is all the way down in seventh in the main event was significant, because I believe early in draft season, people were taking him 2, 3, 4. He was with the Bobby Witts and Julio Rodriguez of the world. But nothing actually happened over the winter. You just got more and more people talking about, hey, remember when he almost blew his shoulder out and we all thought he was done for the year? It was almost as if just people collectively remembered, and then Carroll went down the draft board. And man, I'm sure glad I remembered it based on his performance so far. He looks to me like someone who's playing with a bad shoulder. Is that what you're seeing when you look at his numbers? The power's just gone, but everything else is okay.
And I think the bigger reason, if it was just he hit 25 homers last season, but they were distributed evenly through the season, I think I would be willing to be a little less concerned. But it was June 29th when he first left a game with that shoulder injury. Then a week later, he had the same injury. And I remember we record our podcast at night after the games, and we were all just grief-stricken after both incidences, because we were like, this is it. This is the end of Corbin Carroll's season. I think he was back in the lineup, if not the next day in each situation, within like 48 hours. And so turned out to not be too concerning, but he has played between July 1st of last season to now. If we include spring training, if we include the postseason, he has played 138 games. He has hit 11 home runs in those 138 games.
It's not good.
That is obviously, you're talking about wildly divergent quality of opponents in that range. Postseason is going to be higher than expected. Regular spring training, obviously lower, but 138 games with 11 home runs from a guy who hit 25 homers last season. That's a big enough sample size that I think we can say there appears to be something going on here. Now, what that something might be is that when Corbin Carroll hit, 17 home runs in the first 3 months of last season, it could just be that that wasn't real.
Right.
That he was just playing a little over his head as a power hitter. He was never going to be a 35 homer guy. And what we've seen since, more like a 15 homer guy. Maybe the takeaway here is not the shoulder ruined him. Maybe he just got off to a hot start and wasn't able to sustain that. I think that's a reasonable potential answer as well. But I do think this is one where, when looking at Corbin Carroll, maybe the takeaway should be he's an elite source of stolen bases. And I still believe he'll steal 40 to 50 steals moving forward. I'm not too worried. Like the 196 batting average, I'm not too concerned about that. I think that will be much better moving forward. I still think he'll be a good source of batting average, but maybe it's that he's more like a 15 to 18 homer guy, and that can still be a hugely valuable player. It's just maybe he belongs more in the 8 to 12 range than the 3 to 5 range.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe something like a Trey Turner-ish player.
Yeah.
Year that Trey Turner hit 28 homers, but the normal Trey Turner seasons, I think, was a reasonable expectation for Carroll. But then, once you factor in the chance that, okay, that's probably actually who he is. He's not actually the next Julio Rodriguez. He's more like, what if Trey Turner played outfield, which great player, obviously, great fantasy first rounder, etc. But if that's the guy who he is, and we still think there's a pretty reasonable likelihood, right, that the shoulder is behind this.
Yeah.
Even though I hear you're saying that, like, totally, we may have just overestimated how much power is there and that could be a major part of what's going on here. But even despite all that, I mean, there's at least, what, 25, 30% chance that this is very shoulder related.
Yeah.
So with all that in mind, is he a first rounder for you if you're drafting him today with a real risk of that shoulder trouble?
I think still a first rounder, but it's like when I was drafting, I had it as Acuna in a tier by himself. Then it was for me, Witt, Julio, Corbin Carroll, and Fernando Tatis in their own tier. And I was a little higher on Tatis than the consensus, obviously, but I had those guys in my values around $40. Right. And then after those five, I had Tucker and Mookie and Juan Soto and a bunch of other guys in like the 33 to 35 range, where it went down to about probably 14 in my rankings, where I just, those guys were all very similar to me, different shapes of production, but valued very similarly. And I do think Corbin Carroll deserves to be in that third tier now.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think for me, he might end up falling a little bit outside the first round, but I don't think there's a big gap there. I'm looking at, say, where Ellie De La Cruz went during draft season. He ended up at 20 in the main event. That's somebody with a lot of talent, but you could really see it not going right. And so if you could really see Corbin Carroll, you know, needing a trip to the injured list because this shoulder stuff turns out to be serious, a similar level of risk for me might put him, you know, around pick 20, but I don't think we are very different there. Both definitely downgrading him from his draft day spot. Back to the draft, the ADP from the main event. Carroll was 7. I think Fernando Tatis, Freddie Freeman, 1, Soto. Am I right in saying that all those guys aren't going to move more than a few spots from where they were?
And
they're all right where they should be.
Yeah, no concerns about any of them. I know Tatis is like still putting up elite quality of contact metrics, and then the overall production looked very similar to last year. He's only got the 3 steals. I still expect much better things from him moving forward, so not too concerned there at all.
Yeah, right there with you. And then the next guy, Shohei Ohtani. Now, I don't know if he would move, but he would move for me because I was out on Ohtani. I wrote a whole article on why I'm not drafting Ohtani back in like December or something. And much of it was things like, well, we saw the last time that he was going through elbow surgery, he didn't hit as well. Because guess what? He still has to do all that Tommy John recovery as a pitcher. Yeah. He's still a two-way player. It's still really hard to do what he's doing. And he showed us that it's hard by struggling last time. And Bryce Harper, you know, he struggled coming back from his elbow surgery as well. He was okay for a few, you know, 6 weeks or so, and then he was good. Yeah. And so I thought Shohei Ohtani, he's going to struggle some, and then he'll probably be fine in the second half. But I'm not sure I'm going to draft him around pick 11 because he's going to have a tough 3 months. And I think already after 1 month, I can conclude he's not going to have start the season poorly, right? Because he didn't. He looks like Ohtani. So if I don't move him right back up, I think I'm an idiot.
Yeah, and I do wonder how much like this is a different surgery that he had. The Ohtani, his agents and public statements have been kind of cagey about what exactly this surgery is. It wasn't Tommy John surgery, but they have, I don't know if they've confirmed that it was the internal brace. I'm assuming it was some variation of the internal brace. And there's just like he went to a different doctor who doesn't have the trademark. I think there might be something there. Cause I remember
brace adjacent.
Yeah. Cause Aaron Rodgers, when he had his surgery, it was like this groundbreaking new surgery. And I saw a story about it, and then I read the details and I was like, oh, he had the same thing that Cam Akers did. It was just, they called it a different thing, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
So like, I do wonder if there's something there where it wasn't a full Tommy John surgery. Bryce Harper, I believe, did have a full Tommy John surgery. So maybe it's just this version of that recovery is easier. But yeah, Shohei Ohtani looks like himself. I don't think there's really any reason to be concerned. He is just completely different than anyone in the world. What he's like, the degree of difficulty for everything that he does is off the charts. And the fact that he's doing this coming back from significant elbow surgery is just, it's remarkable.
Yeah. And I think when I wrote that article saying, here's why I'm not drafting him, I definitely had somewhere in there, but he's Shohei Ohtani, and it might just be fine. And I guess I considered that a minor point when I should have considered it the entire point all along. So I am definitely fine with Shohei Ohtani being where he was drafted at 11, maybe even too low, if mm-hmm. anything. Moving down just a little bit more, Trey Turner seems like he was more or less fine. What about Aaron Judge? Not the best start for him. 190 batting average, only, I guess he just hit his sixth homer today mm-hmm. and brought that batting average up to 196. Does this fall into the same, just a little bit of an early slow start? I mean, he's still been up above average by WRC plus. So
yeah, I think this is one that I'm a little less sure of, just because he had that, I think, side injury in spring training that he was, you know, he took like a week off and then was playing through. And then there's been all the talk about the toe and how it's going to have to be something that he manages for the rest of his career. And so I do think when you're talking about a 32-year-old who's 282 pounds, like, Aaron Judge didn't stay healthy for most of his career. And then for a couple of years, he stayed, for the most part, really healthy. And so I do think it's possible that there's something where he's not 100% healthy, but I would still take Aaron Judge, you know, in a 15-team league right at the back of the first round, in a 12-team league right at the beginning of the second round. That's where he was for me coming into the season, so I haven't moved him down.
Yeah, I think that seems fair enough. I'm a little bit wondering. I mean, during draft season, he was treated very similar to Yordan Alvarez, mm-hmm. who went right after him. Both of them incredible sluggers with pretty serious injury concerns. Mm-hmm. There was that other incredible slugger with pretty serious injury concerns named Mike Trout, who went several rounds later. And so far, I think we'll probably get to him in a minute when we talk about some of the guys who maybe should have jumped up. You know, maybe we should have treated Judge and Trout and Alvarez a little bit more similarly. Not totally sure there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about, I tend to be pretty far on the don't worry about injuries side, or the we can't predict injuries side of the ledger, I guess. And it sometimes gets twisted into you should never worry about injuries at all.
Right.
And that's not actually what I believe. What I believe is that the way, like, you listen to all the stuff we're talking about like how granular we can get about, well, he's raised his launch angle 3 degrees and increased his barrel rate, and we have all these ways to quantify so much of fantasy analysis. And then with injuries, a lot of it is just, well, he got hurt last year, so I can't draft him. Or the opposite. I think Luis Robert is a really good example of this, where for such a long time, people were like, I'm never drafting Luis Robert. He can't stay healthy. Well, last year he played, what, 140 games? And it was like, well, Luis Robert stayed healthy. He didn't, though. If you remember, he sprained his knee. It just so happened that instead of that happening in June and costing him 2 months, it happened in September and just ended his season.
Right.
And so that's what I mean when I talk about, like, we're kind of, it's kind of woo, right? Like, it's kind of like, it's very feeling based on how we talk about injuries. And so Judge stays healthy for a couple years, all of a sudden he's past the he can't stay healthy thing. Mike Trout gets hurt a couple years in a row. I mean, it's like 5 years in a row.
Right.
But then we get through a month of the season and Mike Trout looks like Mike Trout and he hasn't gotten hurt yet. And should we just be like, well, now Mike Trout's healthy, and so we should treat, I still think we should probably downgrade these guys for injuries. And so that's the tough thing about Trout is right now, I think on a per game basis, he's absolutely a first round player. He's running again. Are you kidding me? This is amazing. This is what we've wanted to see for a half a decade. But yeah, there's still a chance he gets hurt. And that's always.
Yeah, that's with injuries concern. Being so vibes-based, there's definitely an attempt to just only focus on the things that has actual hard data that we feel like we can know. Yeah. And I think there's a lot to that.
Yeah, but that's the way I lean.
Right.
More so than just ignoring injuries entirely.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. And then sometimes I get bitten because I got way too many injury players on the same team.
Yeah.
Just going back to a few more guys right around the back of the first round, Yordan Alvarez, Jose Ramirez, Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler, Matt Olson, Bryce Harper, all those guys feel like they more or less belong right where they were taken so far.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Corbin Burns was kind of in a tier of his own among starting pitchers, and I was sort of on my own in that because I know Wheeler, his ADP was basically identical to him. Burns is off to an interesting start, but it kind of justifies how I feel, and maybe this is just confirmation bias, but he hasn't looked exactly like the 2021-2022 version of Corbin Burns, where he was putting up 30-35% strikeout rates and just dominating. He's been 26% strikeout rate like he was last year. But part of my case for him was I think Camden Yards is now such a good place to pitch, and the Orioles are such a good team to pitch for, that even if he doesn't return to being a true standout ace, I think he'll still be the number one pitcher in baseball because of the improved surroundings. And so I do still have him a little bit separated from the rest of the pitching tier. But yeah, him and Wheeler at number one and two, I think remains the right call.
Yeah, it still feels weird to me. Neither of them feel like they should be fantasy SP1s in a normal year, but that's because Spencer Strider and Garrett Cole are gone.
Yeah, right? it's not the normal year, yeah.
Right. It is not their fault if they fail to live up to the mantle of being a traditional SP1. The 20th guy in the main event, ADP, is going to lead us right into our next section. That's Ellie De La Cruz. But first, this message from Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you earn rewards with every single ticket purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress toward your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. We have been going over the first round players who we wish we ranked differently after 1 month of the season. There aren't too many who we would have significantly moved. Corbin Carroll, I think we are moving down. Shohei Ohtani, me at least, I'm moving back up and joining the crowd. Some modest worries on Julio Rodriguez, but nothing really too bad there. Wouldn't move him too much. But hey, there's some guys who are moving way up, starting with Ellie De La Cruz, who was taken 20th off the board in the main event. Most of the spring, I would say, most fantasy analysts were saying, what is everyone doing, saying Ellie De La Cruz, or taking him so early? I think my position was that, but also, hey, there's still some upside here, so don't let him fall too far. And so I was able to get him in one or two places where I was in a league with more of those conservative people. And I'm sure happy about how that's going so far, but I can't claim to have been, you know, a super Ellie De La Cruz guy, because I wouldn't have taken him at 20 either. I'd sure take him earlier than 20 today. How early do you think you would take Ellie De La Cruz if you were drafting today?
That's a really tough question, because all of the downside, all of the, like, the criticisms of Ellie De La Cruz in a lot of ways are still there. He still strikes out too much, 32% strikeout rate. He still can't really hit lefties all that well, although it's better. It's like 750 OPS this season. That's with like a 380 BABIP, so I don't know how sustainable it is. And the plate discipline against lefties remains really bad, and all this stuff. And like, I don't know. I don't want to have to answer it, because I have him 18th in my overall ranking. So that is behind Aaron Judge, Jordan Alvarez, Matt Olson, Corbin Burns, Bryce Harper. Those are the players right ahead of him. And I'll admit, it feels kind of dumb to have some of those guys ahead of Ellie De La Cruz when he's, you know, what, on pace for... Is he on pace for like 130 runs, 140 runs, like 40 homers, and like 100 plus stolen bases? Like the start to this season is outrageous. And it feels dumb to be skeptical of a player who is even capable of a 27 game stretch like this, because look, it's 27 games, but how many players are even capable of a 27 game stretch of 7 homers and 17 stolen bases?
Right.
It might just be two. It might be Ellie De La Cruz and Ronald Acuna. And, you know, I'm looking back at my bust article from before the season where I did have Ellie De La Cruz as a bust. And I said, the best case scenario for De La Cruz puts him in contention for the number one pick this time last season. So I was definitely cognizant of the upside and how well things could go.
You knew he might do this.
I also said that there might not be another player inside the top 75 in ADP with more demotion risk. And that looks dumb. There's no way Ellie De La Cruz is getting sent down based on...
Did you write that before all of the...
That was before everybody got hurt in Cincinnati or suspended. Yeah, so the playing time risk for a lot of guys in Cincinnati changed. Spencer Steer was someone I thought about putting on a bust list early on, and then all the playing time concerns went away. So, you know, circumstances change, life finds a way, and I have definitely moved Ellie De La Cruz up. 18 still feels low, but I want to see, like I said earlier, I want to see what it looks like when things aren't going as well for him. Because now we've seen 2 years in a row, he gets off to an incredible start. Last year, he faded hard. He was like a 620 OPS bat for a long stretch. What does it look like when he inevitably struggles? Because I don't think he's going to hit 280 with a 987 OPS the rest of the season. If he does, there is your likely number one or number two pick next season, and nobody else is even in the conversation. It's him and Ronald Acuna and a whole bunch of also-rans. So that's the balance that's tough to juggle, jeez,
right,
with Ellie De La Cruz right now.
You have balanced those two, and you'll end up with him just outside the first round.
Yeah, I mean,
sounds look, like, but not by a lot, certainly.
I'm not. If you wanted to trade, if I had Ellie De La Cruz and someone called me and said, "Hey, I'll give you Matt Olson for him," I have Matt Olson ranked ahead. I can't do that trade right now.
Right.
So maybe Ellie De La Cruz needs to be 50. But if somebody called me Aaron Judge for Ellie De La Cruz, I would have to strongly, strongly consider it, because Aaron Judge in 2022, different shape, but showed similar ceiling outcomes over a full season that we've never seen from Ellie De La Cruz.
Yeah, I'll give you 2 points that would explain why I would push him just a little bit higher than that. Mm-hmm. The first one is, in De La Cruz's first 9 games this year, he struck out 46% of the time. Since then, under 25%.
Yeah, the playtest book has been awesome. He's walking a ton, too.
And so if you're looking for reasons, like if your knock on De La Cruz is, man, he does everything else, but that strikeout rate, that's problematically high. There's a real chance that it settles in as high, but nowhere near problematically high. Like, what if he's at 27, 28% by the end of the year?
He's probably totally the number one pick in fantasy, yeah.
Exactly. And I think he might be heading that way. The other point I would make here is that I had him during draft season right next to Shohei Ohtani, which for me was more middle of the second round, because I thought both of them were phenomenal power speed guys who could do everything, but who also had major risks. In Ohtani's case, we talked about before, was it really going to work? Was he going to be Shohei Ohtani while going through Tommy John rehab or similar? I don't know. Turns out, yes. And with Ellie De La Cruz, it was, you know, was he going to stay in the majors, or was this whole thing going to blow up? And it turns out that you can't actually be 7 feet tall and strike out half the time, and he's not a major leaguer. That was possible. Mm-hmm. And so if they were both these uber talented, you know, do everything 5-category guys who had some risk, some major risk, and if we're decreasing those risks, shouldn't they probably go together? For me, I think they probably do go together around pick 9 to 11-ish.
That's totally fair.
Stay together outside.
Yeah,
I guess it's just totally a risk tolerance thing there, ultimately, at that point. In some ways.
Yeah, I think part of it is also just, and this is sort of a cop out, but when I'm doing my actual rankings, it's a lot easier to move lower ranked guys up. I'm much more aggressive with moving guys up than I am moving them down, but especially when you go lower in the rankings. And also, to a certain extent, it's one of the questions I ask myself during the rankings process at this point in the season is, does it matter that much if I move this guy up? Like, I've moved Ellie De La Cruz ahead of, I had Austin Riley and Rafael Devers ahead of him. I moved him ahead of those guys. So if you're, you know, talking specifically just about like, where does he rank among his third base peers? He's number two now for me. I have him behind Jose Ramirez. If you wanted to have him ahead of Jose Ramirez, I think that's perfectly reasonable as well. But it doesn't change. Like, if he's 12 for me versus 18, it doesn't really change how I view him all that much. And so I'm still okay moving him a little more slowly than others might. But
yeah, fair enough.
I can't really make a strong case against it.
We'll check in on your rankings every couple weeks and see if he's moving up one spot every week. Eventually you'll get him up to number one and then number zero. Moving on to a different speedster who's off to a great start, CJ Abrams.
Yeah,
people had plenty of reason to doubt that he was going to get all the way there this year. His bat wasn't really good enough last year. 90 WRC plus, 18 homers wasn't bad. 47 steals, had a ton of fantasy appeal. But if you just thought that he was going to run a ton and just not really do enough to justify, you know, a third round pick, that was reasonable. I didn't think that. I took CJ Abrams a lot of places because I thought he was going to run a ton and that maybe the bat would take a step forward. So far, he's not actually running a ton. Five steals is definitely some, but it's not a ton. But the bat took more than just a step forward. He's been a great hitter so far. Six homers, a 993 OPS. How far would you be moving up CJ Abrams? Is he back of the not top first round, but not too far from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, the biggest question was, is there actually a good enough bat here? And I think one of the most impressive things I've seen from a player so far this season was the home run that CJ Abrams hit in San Francisco off Kyle Harrison. It was like an up and in fastball. Kyle Harrison has a pretty good fastball. It's a lefty. I think it was like 94 miles an hour. He crushed it like 420 feet to the deepest part of Oracle Park, which is the toughest park for left-handed hitters to hit for power in Major League Baseball. So there were a lot of concerns about whether there was enough power here. I read a really good piece from, I think it was Robert Orr from Baseball Prospectus right before the season, talking about how, you know, CJ Abrams may not have the prototypical power hitter profile. He may not hit the ball super hard, but what he started doing when he moved to the leadoff spot, especially, was hitting a lot more line drives and fly balls to the pull side of the field. And he's really continued that so far. And I do think there is legit pop here. I think 20 homers is a reasonable floor, and probably more like 25 is what I'd expect the rest of the way. He's so young. He's still only 23. He got called up after, like, I think he's only played like 100 minor league games total. And so the development path for both him and Luis Garcia on the Nationals was really weird. They were both aggressively promoted. So it wouldn't be a shock that he's developing both slowly and rapidly, I guess, if that makes sense. Right. Like developing slowly and then all at once for a guy that scouts always loved. So I'm bought in on Abrams. He's moved up at least a couple of rounds for me. I'm not sure the first round range, but he was someone who was maybe more like a third round pick for me. And now I think he's definitely a second round.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Firmly mid-second round. Seems pretty good to me for CJ Abrams. The next guy on the list of hot starts we did touch on briefly before, Mike Trout, but I don't know if we actually said how much we would be moving him. Mike Trout in the main event, he was picked at 79 on average, and I think we'd probably move him up from there. Of course, you know, if your knock was durability, you can't just say, well, his durability problems are fixed. He's been healthy for four weeks. That's not how durability works. So would it be crazy to move Trout at all? I mean, the running, we have to move him for the fact that
he's running. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. He and this was something we, Frank Stanfill and I talked to Joe Madden on opening day. We did an interview with him, and that was one of the things we asked him, because, you know, he had been Mike Trout's manager for a few years during the stretch where Trout stopped running. And what we asked him was, like, is it he can't steal bases anymore? Is it he doesn't want to? Or is it just we're trying to keep him healthy? And Joe Madden said, yeah, like, I could see, you know, with Ron Washington being the manager there, they've talked about wanting to be more aggressive on the bases. I could see him running more. And lo and behold, Mike Trout has remained an elite foot speed guy. You know, 91st percentile in sprint speed this year. I think it's been like 90 percentile plus every year of his career. There's been basically no drop off in his foot speed. And so it's just does he want to? And right now the Angels absolutely want him to. So I don't see any reason he'll slow down. Maybe not. What is he on, a 30 steal pace right now? I would take the under on that, but Mike Trout with 20 plus steals and maybe best in the majors power, I'm ranking him in the third round. So that's a 4-round improvement from where his ADP was. It's about a 3-round improvement from where I ranked him. And he's my number 10 outfielder. So he's right behind Aaron Judge. I could continue to move him up. The problem is, just because he's healthy right now doesn't mean he will remain healthy. And that's the toughest thing about ranking Trout, is it comes down to your personal level of risk tolerance. If you want to trade him right now and you could get Aaron Judge for him, I think you'd probably have to do that.
Yeah.
But
unless we were wrong on how durable Judge is,
sure, and
maybe
exactly.
Judge should be in the third round, but
and
yeah,
so yeah,
that, Judge in the first. Yeah.
But I think it's found money with Trout, and you should probably just hold him, because I think on a per game basis, I certainly expect him to play like a first rounder.
Yeah. And I think your third round call makes a ton of sense there, because I'm seeing an outfielder who went in the third round at pick 41 in the main event, who is a 5-category player with major, major injury concerns. And that's Luis Robert. I think maybe Mike Trout should have been drafted like Luis Robert all along. I think, well, if we knew he was going to run, he should have been drafted Luis Robert. I think I'm okay saying that. Now we know. Also, just want to give props to you for that interview. That was quite a fun one with Joe Maddon, and I would recommend it to our listeners to go find it. I think plenty of it was relevant beyond just the immediate week when it happened. I thought you guys had a really good discussion him, asked some good questions, so I would highly recommend that. A few pitchers who have been off to incredible starts. Jared Jones. We got to talk some Jared Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Just how high should we have taken Jared Jones if we knew what we knew now after the first month, where he looks like, you know, right up there with the best pitchers in baseball in terms of strikeouts and walks and most of the ERA estimators? I mean, if you wanted to say who's the next guy who's going to be a top three, top five kind of starter next year, this would be the first month that you'd want them to have. It's just a month, but I certainly can't find anything to complain about with Jared Jones. So how aggressive would you be if you're drafting today?
And on the whole, I'm much more willing to aggressively move a starting pitcher than a hitter, just because while a month sample size is very small for both of them, it's easier to suss out skill changes for pitchers. Like, you can kind of fake hitting the ball hard for a couple of weeks. Sometimes guys just get hot.
Right.
You can't really fake what Jared Jones is doing right now. And I think on a purely talent basis, I don't know if there are 5 pitchers I would rather have than Jared Jones right now. I'm just looking through the top of my pitcher rankings, and like, I don't think Kevin Gausman right now is a better inning for inning pitcher than Jared Jones. And given the shoulder injury that he had in spring training, I'm not sure he's a safer pick right now. Zach Gallen has his concerns. Pablo Lopez hasn't been great. Yoshi Yamamoto has some concerns. Like, I have Jared Jones 21st in starting pitcher rankings. It would not take much to move him ahead of Max Fried. It would not take much to move him ahead of Framber Valdez. We'll see, you know, what the first couple of starts coming off IL look like for him. But Jared Jones seems unlikely to pitch more than like 155 innings this season. So I think that's enough to keep him in like the high end SP2 range of the rankings. But in terms of where I draft him, it's probably the 6th round. But that's also where I draft Dylan Cease, who's off to an incredible start. And Grayson Rodriguez, who's off to a really nice start in his own right. So it's a very aggressive ranking for Jared Jones. And it's probably not as high as I want him to be.
Yeah. I think looking at some guys who went in the sixth round back in the main event, Jesus Luzardo right at the front of it. Dylan
would absolutely, even before the elbow injury, I would think I would have taken Jared Jones ahead of Jesus Luzardo.
Chris Sale went in that round.
An interesting one.
Yeah. So these are some guys who are capable of some elite numbers and have some risk there. I was looking at, I did an article on Jones a few days ago where I looked at just what does it mean for him to have shown specifically this level of control so far, because he was supposed to have great stuff. The stuff's even better than it was supposed to be, but like I can get that. That can happen. Mm-hmm. Maybe the analysts undershot on the reports of his stuff by a little bit. Maybe he's having a little bit hot month. Maybe he developed a little bit. That's normal. But he was supposed to have a control problem.
Yeah.
And he's had almost elite control in terms of walk rate, even in terms of something like location plus, a more advanced stat there. He also shows up as very good. And I looked at what does it mean to show the kind of walk rate, the kind of location plus that he's shown through this point of the season. Other pitchers who had those marks, they pretty much all ended up with very good control by the end of the year. I think in terms of walk rate, they all stayed under 6% except for Nick Pivetta. Darn Nick Pivetta ruining things there. But even he was at like 7.3% or something. So even if you take the most pessimistic comps for Jones's walk rate so far, he's still going to show better than average command there. And even if the strikeout rate falls down a lot, it's still going to be in the high 20s. So if you look at like a 28% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate as a fairly pessimistic place for him to end up, that's Jesus Luzardo. That's a six-round starter, exactly like you're saying.
And like I want to be calm and rational and not overreact, but like he looks like Spencer Strider.
Yeah.
Like it looks like Spencer Strider just started pitching for the Pirates instead of getting hurt. That's like if you look at the various stuff models, say he has arguably the best fastball in baseball. They say he's got a top 10 slider, which actually he uses it kind of like two different pitches. He's got like a harder slider that he throws like a cutter. He's got more of a loopy one that he gets swings and misses on. Even the changeup and curveball, which he rarely uses, actually rate out really well by the stuff metrics. So, yeah, if Jared Jones isn't an ace the rest of the season, I don't think it'll be because of talent. I think it'll be because something went wrong.
Yeah, so aggressive move for Jared Jones, or maybe not. If we're only calling him in the sixth round, maybe many of you out there would take him in the second. We'll see. Let us know if that's the case. But I'm feeling pretty good about sixth round Jared Jones. We're over the hour mark here, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. But I did throw two other starting pitchers on here. Shota Imanaga, Ranger Suarez, both off to excellent starts. Suarez, I believe, is the SP1 in fantasy right now. Would you be moving those guys up significantly? Obviously not to SP1 in Ranger Suarez's case, but they've certainly impressed me and many other people through 1 month so far.
Yeah, the last time I updated my rankings, Suarez was only SP73. That's too low.
Yes.
I don't know how high I can move him. We've seen similar-ish stretches from Ranger Suarez. I don't know if we've exactly seen a stretch this good, but 2021, he was really, really good. Remember, it was a 136 ERA over 106 innings. It was mostly partially in relief. I think he only started 12 games that year, but he was really, really good. 2022 came back, full-time starter. He wasn't quite as good, but he was still a very useful fantasy option. That's what I expect. I expect not a 28% strikeout rate, but something in the low 20s. Good command, good results on balls in play. Probably someone who settles in the 55 to 60 range of my rankings, which that's not necessarily a criticism, because I've got like Jack Flaherty, Tanner Houck, and Cutter Crawford in the 55 to 60 range. And I like all those guys a lot. So that's probably where I would slot Ranger Suarez in right now. And then
he belongs with the completely fine, reliable pitchers, and he just wasn't drafted with them. He was drafted as a complete afterthought.
Even
in the reserve rounds, and it was wrong. He's shown that he was a completely fine, reliable pitcher before.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone was wrong on this, and even if he's going to fall back, they were still wrong.
Yes.
Back to Imanaga.
You mentioned Imanaga. The homers haven't been an issue yet for him. He's only given up two through his first five starts. That's going to be a problem, I feel like, for him in a way that when the homers aren't a problem, I actually think the comp is probably like Joe Ryan, where when the homers aren't a problem, he's going to look incredible because he's going to get a bunch of strikeouts. He's not going to walk anybody. And he's probably going to have pretty good results on balls in play, because if they're not turning into home runs, they're probably just turning out into flyouts. The problem is there is going to be a month where Shota Imanaga gives up like 9 home runs, and he's probably going to have a 5 ERA, and you're going to be really frustrated that you have him in your lineup when that stretch happens. But I think on the whole, you should be very happy that you have Imanaga. I have him 34th, but that's like kind of, I've stashed like Blake Snell, Bobby Miller, Walker Buehler, Justin Steele are all stashed right ahead of him in the rankings. So in terms of active pitchers, he's probably top 30 right now for me. And I feel pretty good about that. He's a little bit behind Joe Ryan, but I think that's the comp I would go with.
Yeah, definitely a pretty meaningful move then, I think, from where he was drafted. And that was even with people liking him heading into the season. I agree with you on the homers. I think a Joe Ryan comp is a good one. I've also thought about, is he a lefty Bailey Ober or something?
Sure, yeah.
We'll only make one counterpoint there, which is, here is Imanaga's ground ball rate in his first start, 0%. In his next start, 18%. In his third start, 39%. And then in both his fourth and his fifth starts, he had a ground ball rate over 50%. And he did say something in his press conference after the first game saying, well, yeah, I was pitching to the conditions, and I was at that game. The conditions were horrible. The wind was blowing straight down, so you wanted to throw a whole bunch of fly balls. And maybe that's the only thing that I'm keeping in mind here, just because we've only seen this guy for a month. Maybe he's got a few tricks up his sleeve that are going to, you know, prevent things from getting as bad. I would not assume those are all true, but his ground ball rate at 37% now is actually a normal mark. It's low, but normal. And I thought that he might be, you know, a true outlier.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. He's also thrown a couple sinkers in his last few starts. It's only like 3 total, so I don't know if that is indicative of anything, but that's, that's a potentially interesting wrinkle as well.
All right. Were there any other players that you remember moving a ton on your rankings that I forgot to put on the outline here?
I mean, there's a bunch of like lower guys who have moved, like Ivan Herrera has moved up a ton for me. I think he's a really viable catcher number 2. But I think we covered a lot of them. Gleyber Torres is an interesting one. I have moved him down a little bit into like the 90 overall range, which probably, that's like a round and a half behind where he was being drafted. And the thing with him is there's not a lot to point to in the underlying stats to be optimistic about. He's having just a truly bad start. But somebody asked me about him yesterday, Gleyber Torres, and the way that I put it is, go ahead and drop him if you want. It's your team ultimately. If he does what he did last season, would you regret it? I think the answer is obviously yes. And so I'm not
in every league.
Yeah, so I'm not ready to drop Gleyber Torres yet, even though I have dropped him in my rankings a little bit. It's probably not as much as most people would want, but that's how I operate. I try not to overreact to a month, and Gleyber Torres, I think, is a good example of where I don't want to overreact yet.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I should note on Gleyber Torres, if there's some suggestion that the ball isn't traveling quite as far this year, if that is borne out, Gleyber Torres is the poster boy for players whose values change when the ball changes. Yeah. So we should keep an eye on how Gleyber Torres' season goes. That's another way in which it could go poorly. But I'm also right there with you in reminding everybody that one cold month might just be a cold month.
Yep.
That's going to do it for our show today. Thanks so much for your time. Chris, anything you want to plug on your way out the door?
I mentioned it earlier, but the Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter on cbssports.com/newsletters. We do that, or I do that 5 days a week. I think it's really great content that should help you compete in your league. So Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter, cbssports.com/newsletters.
Great stuff. Thank you very much for your time, Chris. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, commenters. And we'll be back with another podcast tonight. Jeff and Scott going over the big pickups of Babb this weekend here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.